Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart at Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kehan. Today, we'll discuss the article by Cherubini et al. Titled, Sleep Deprivation and Endothelial Function, Reconciling Seminal Evidence with Recent Perspectives. This article was published October 16th, 2020. Joining me today are Editor-in-Chief Irv Zucker, lead author Maureen McDonald, and expert Karen Esser. Let's get started.
Thank you, Kara, and welcome to Maureen and Karen for what I'm sure will be an interesting discussion of a very fascinating field of biology. As most of our listeners are probably well aware, disordered sleep is a major health concern in the U.S. and globally. These conditions include insomnia, sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, parasomnia, and circadian rhythm disorders. Many of these disorders contribute to cardiovascular disease by a variety of mechanisms. However, the cellular and molecular mechanisms responsible for cardiovascular events in sleep disorders is not completely understood. The current review and the topic of our discussion today will be of interest to many. Maureen, let's get started by setting the stage for our listeners concerning the major issues related to sleep disorders, and especially as it contributes to cardiovascular dysfunction. And then we can have Karen comment on additional molecular mechanisms related to specific protein changes during sleep deprivation.
Thanks, Irv, and thanks for having me on today. It's really interesting, as you say, that how broad the interest is in sleep disorders, and yet how little we seem to understand about it. I read somewhere that we are asleep for approximately one third of our lives, and I expect as many of us are experiencing right now in the pandemic, it might even be less than that right now. When we started to look at this as a cardiovascular exercise physiology lab, I was quite struck by two things. One, how consistent the knowledge and understanding is that disordered sleep has negative cardiovascular impacts, both acutely and chronically. And yet, despite that kind of universal understanding, how little was actually known about the mechanisms that might regulate that, and therefore how we might be able to effectively intervene to mitigate those potential negative effects. We are an exercise physiology lab, and actually it's interesting how we decided to do this research because we typically study something called endothelial function, which is the focus of this review. And we do those measures according to current guidelines, which have lots of controls for them. We control for time of day, diet, menstrual cycle, medications, prior exercise and activity, temperature of the room, participant position, all these things. But we do not typically control for sleep. We were conducting a study a few years ago where we had a student nurse report after having adhered to all of the instructions and anecdotally say that she had been up all night. We became interested in whether that could affect the endothelial function. And in fact, this review points directly to that, that consistently we see that sleep deprivation, whether it is acute or chronic, whether it is partial or total, can have negative effects on endothelial function in humans, as well as in other models, whether you look in animal models or in cell culture models. We also see that most of the literature points to two main potential sources of mechanisms, that may be related to disruptions in the autonomic balance or changes in the circadian control mechanisms for those endothelial cells and therefore vascular function. In our review, we point to the fact that we think much of the literature with respect to the potential role of autonomic balance is fairly mixed, that while there may be influences of autonomic balance on endothelial function and therefore cardiovascular function and health as a result of sleep deprivation, it's not as consistent as when we look at circadian disruption. And that's in part why I'm so interested to hear what Karen might have to say here. I was quite shocked to find out that although we have a central clock and it has very important functions and dominant control, we have lots of peripheral clocks, and that over 40% of all proteins coding for genes in human cells are actually influenced by circadian clock genes. And that also encompasses the peripheral vascular cells that we typically look at in my research. So we're very interested to follow up this review with some actual experimental studies in our human participants, but also perhaps collaborate and look in some of the cell culture work to advance these questions.
Thank you, Maureen. I think I agree that this is a really fascinating and important area. Karen, your lab has made some major contributions in understanding the role of sleep and circadian rhythms and the regulation of clock genes in skeletal muscle. Can you comment on some of these molecular mechanisms and how they might be entrained during the circadian cycle?
Sure. And I want to say thanks to you, Herb, and to Maureen. I really enjoyed her paper. The topic of circadian rhythms and clocks in cells and the association between disruption and sleep disruption and disease, I think, is a really exciting and rapidly emerging topic. So what I can contribute to this is that I've been working in the area of circadian rhythms, in particular, as you said, in skeletal muscle, but I think the main point here being in the peripheral tissues. What people have been learning over the last 10 years is that a clock mechanism actually exists in every single cell in our body. So when we think about circadian rhythms, this is no longer just a neuroscience question. This is actually a physiological systemic health question. And so I think as we start to see the emergence of the association between clocks and disease properties, so in the case of endothelial cells and in vascular tissue, probably one of the more actively studied areas are the links between clock dysfunction and atherosclerotic plaques and progression. Again, it's a fairly new field, but the data are emerging quite clearly that you disrupt the clocks in the endothelial cells within these vascular areas and they predispose to development of plaques. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. So I think that, you know, this is something that happens rapidly and the data in this area is quite robust. I think, you know, the role of the clocks in endothelial cell function in the vascular beds is very important. The other area that this affects is also the blood-brain barrier. And so allowing leakiness and stuff in the brain is also related to clock function in the endothelial cells. The main point here is that clocks exist in the endothelial cells. The relationship between sleep disruption and circadian rhythms is well established. Once you start disrupting sleep, whether it's sleep apnea or, you know, having a new baby or whatever kind of events are happening in your life that disrupt sleep, that is automatically associated with circadian disruption. And so then the corollary here is you would predict that there would be significant downstream effects in the cells of the vasculature.
I think those are all well taken points. I want to go back to Maureen a little bit and focus down at the endothelial level. Maureen, you have a nice figure in your review showing the balance between the autonomic nervous system, aerobic exercise, and an altered circadian rhythmicity. But down at the cell level, can you talk a little bit about the role of nitric oxide, reactive oxygen stress, and maybe shear stress on top of that and how that might be influencing vascular function?
Yeah, thanks. I think this is a really central point to consider when we think about how all of these things might interplay together. So as Karen just said, the circadian clock is also involved in many other activities, including the pathways that regulate oxidative stress. And so what we've seen is that overexpression of certain clock genes increases reactive oxygen species, and that if we eliminate them, that can mitigate some of those adaptations. On the other hand, as you identified, as an exercise physiologist, we're very interested in what happens with exercise and reactive oxygen species and their companion nitric oxide that we know is such an important vasodilator, as well as having other functions in the body. And so we think this is a really interesting intersection for some current research and for future investigations of interventional strategies, because if clock genes are both regulating oxidative stress and oxidative function and exercise can influence those, we have an opportunity to affect right at the actual cellular level in terms of the impact on those endothelial cells. And in fact, we reference some studies that have been done looking at exercise and oxidative stress and nitric oxide, as well as sleep deprivation. And much of that literature is pointing to interesting effects and positive effects of acute and chronic exercise on situations that people might find themselves in with respect to sleep deprivation. For example, we tried to conduct one of our first experimental studies in this, where we wanted to take young, healthy university students and have them come into the lab for measures after 3 days of normal sleep, which we defined according to the criteria, and then one night of partial sleep deprivation. The biggest challenge to the study was actually getting young, healthy university age students to have what was described as normal sleep. So I think we've got whole generations and whole cohorts of individuals that normal sleep is not going to be what we expected to be previously, and that we're going to have to look at strategies like exercise and exercise training for some efficient interventions. I want to mention, Karen, this was an interesting science coincidence. When I told my husband that I couldn't make dinner tonight, that it was his turn because I had to record this podcast, he asked me what paper it was for, and I told him, and he told me that he had just published a paper with you looking at a really neat study led out of Australia, where you took three groups of individuals and had them either sleep deprived, normal sleep, or sleep deprived with exercise. So my husband is Stuart Phillips, and he said, oh, that's a really neat coincidence. Yeah,
that is wonderful. Yeah, I mean, if I might add too, is that our lab, as well as some others at the more cellular level, has shown a direct interaction with time of exercise, or exercise depending on what time of day it's occurring, and directly modifying some of the clock factors. So totally agree with the concept of the potential for applying exercise as a therapeutic strategy, not just to combat the issues that arise from sleep disruption, but potentially helping mitigate some of the clock disruption that happens in these conditions as well.
Yeah, this is really fascinating. Let me ask you both, are there any differences in endothelial function, in blood pressure effects, in blood flow to tissues during either exercise or flow-mediated dilation, depending upon the type of sleep disruption that occurs? So people with sleep apnea, it's well known, have high levels of sympathetic tone even during the wake cycle. People with insomnia may respond differently. What's known about that?
So I think that's a key feature that you're highlighting, Irv, and that is that I don't think all of these different areas of investigation of sleep disruption have been basically collected together at the mechanistic level to be able to understand what are the nuances. As Karen identified, I've just been using the term sleep disruption, but sleep disruption can be length of sleep, it can be quality of sleep, it can be timing of sleep, it can be impacted by a variety of factors. And so each of those conditions you highlighted at the beginning is really a different experimental and or observational control for a number of factors that you could be influencing, that then could change both autonomic balance as well as the circadian disruption, and therefore the mechanisms at the cellular level in terms of endothelial function, but also the cellular level of pretty much all of the cells in all human tissues. And so I think it's a complex map that I do think some of the approaches that Karen is taking, looking at metabolomics and some of those other indicators, are going to be needed to be able to discern where is the point of intersection of all of the pieces of evidence that we've been accumulating.
Thank you very much. So I just want to wrap this up by giving you a little anecdote. About 10 years ago, I was invited to a meeting in Saudi Arabia, of all places. And I was on the airplane and struck up a conversation with the gentleman sitting next to me. And his name was Franz Hallberg from the University of Minnesota. And if you know the whole area of circadian biology, Franz Hallberg coined the term circadian in 1959. And they established a whole institute. And once we got to our destination, Franz immediately slapped ambulatory blood pressure monitors on all the participants and collected a large amount of data and was compiling a huge database on circadian, ultradian, and infraradian cycles. I don't know whatever happened to that data because he unfortunately passed away shortly after that. But I thought it was an appropriate story to wrap up this conversation. So thank you both very much. And I think our readers will really enjoy listening to this podcast. Kara, back to you.
Thanks for listening. Would you like to hear more? Visit the AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology homepage for our latest episodes. Thank you.